Hey guys, I have a question for you. How do you spread abundance? This year, Joe and I are spreading even more abundance by giving out insights on money, wealth strategies, and resources in our current newsletter, Creating Abundance in 52 Weeks, that we want to share with you for free. So sign up right now as you're listening to this episode on our website at www.abundantculture.co. That's .co/newsletter, www.abundantculture.co/newsletter. Don't let delay get in the way of your abundant year. Now, back to the episode.
Welcome back to Abundant Culture Podcast,
where we dissect the mindsets and tactics of the true beasts of business.
People like Gary Vee, Grant Cardone, and Warren Buffett.
All to create a blueprint to experience life more abundantly.
Hey everybody, it's Joe from the Abundant Culture Podcast. We're so glad to have you back. We are talking about something that I feel like is very awesome. You know that we love non-for-profit work. We feel like it's super, super important to give back to charity. And today we're interviewing somebody who runs a non-for-profit organization. And this non-for-profit organization specializes in teaching underprivileged youth how to code. Now, coding is something that has exploded these last couple decades because there's a huge demand for people who have that skill in the job market. And it's not uncommon for these people with that skill to earn high six-figure incomes. So this is something that I feel like is very, very important, especially in underprivileged communities. And today, our guest is going to be talking to us about how he does what he does, how he raises capital, how from donations and all the different things that go on behind the scenes of a not-for-profit. So get ready to listen to and learn from our good friend, Ali Karbassi.
Hi, Ali, and thank you again for coming on to the Abundant Culture Podcast. We are super excited to have you today because when you and I talked a couple weeks ago, we had a great conversation, and I love what you're doing in the Chicago community. But before we get into, you know, all the coding and the nonprofit stuff, tell us your backstory. How did you get into business?
Awesome. Well, it was, your energy is insane. I love it. So when we talked, we talked for like an hour. It was supposed to be like a 30 minute or a 15 minute, but you know, you and I can probably talk for days, right?
Right.
So that's a really good question about my backstory. I got into the nonprofit space because it kind of fell into my lap. I was a nerd growing up, right? At age 7, I started coding, you know, dabbling with this and that. And, you know, I got this bug of like, oh, I can create. And at the same time, you know, my father gave me a camera and said, go create. And I just fell in love with creating something, creating the view of my life and showing to people like, this is what I see, or this is what I think is funny. Or this is what I think is, you know, we didn't have memes back in the day, but like, this is meme worthy, right?
Yeah.
And it was a great way for me to express myself and to control something, you know, with computers. So for me, I fell in love with creating and showing people what I could do with creating something. And I was just confused why other people weren't doing this. So I was very, at a young age, very, very vocal about, hey, this could be for you. This is a good way of doing something, putting your thoughts to paper. Mm-hmm. That led to high school and, you know, taking some computer classes. And, you know, in the early 2000s, you know, we didn't have many computer classes. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin. And our, you know, God bless him, but our gym teacher was the computer teacher. He had taken a course, right, the summer before, a quick, you know, PD. I'm guessing it was a couple hours or maybe a week. And he was teaching off the book. And I already had read the book. I had owned the book for a couple of years. So it was like, oh, this book, I remember this book, which led to him looking at me, you know, this is hindsight, being like, oh, here's a nerd kid that already knows this stuff, probably knows more than me. Let him go do, I'm going to, rather than him be annoying in class, I'm going to give him an independent study. Being a freshman and hearing independent study, what? That's a college person thing.
Right.
And I just fell in love with it. He gave me the freedom to explore and do things and look at other books out there. He gave me a lot of great resources. And that led to me creating a lot. Now I have dedicated time every day, which led me to wanting to be online. And this is when we didn't have internet at home. The local university had internet access. And fast at the time, internet access. So I went over there and snuck in, and I had facial hair in high school. So I kind of blended in with, maybe a young college student. So I snuck in at the local university, started using their computer lab, and just putzing around online, learning more things. And, early internet was, just this free-for-all of knowledge. And, being young, I was just living there. I would go from school to the university and would leave when the computer lab was closing, which is 10:30. My parents weren't concerned because I was getting homework done. And classic parent stuff. At the time, you think you're being sneaky, but they know what you're doing. Which led me to becoming friends with the computer tech person who was also the computer science teacher. And to a point where we became friends, and his TA had dropped, and he said to me, would you want to be a TA? And I was, second year of high school. I'm like, what? I don't go to school here. And, thinking that I'm being sneaky, but no, they all knew, right? No one thought I was 20. right? So they chatted with my father and my mom, and they, approved me being a TA. Just a helper, if I was looking back at it now, in class, which was amazing because the people we were teaching were my old teachers from middle school, and some of them that I took, freshman year, and some of them that were, older that I hadn't taken before. And I'm teaching them web development. And that's when I got that bug. I want to teach. I want to give back. I love that spur of the moment. Idea bulb, that expression of I can do this, and hitting the wall and being like, I can't do this. This is insane. And then figuring it out. You're like that awesome feeling of I got it. Right. So fast forward, went off to college and didn't go for education, went for computer science and software engineering and art. So I have my dual degrees there. And for me, the point where I realized there was a problem in STEM was apparent in college when most of my classes were white males and, not even white females, just mostly white males. And there'd be one, maybe two women in the course. And, being the brown man in the room, I knew what that felt like. Mm-hmm. And I was confused why there was no diversity. And through a lot of conversation with professors and professors on the art side and professors on the computer side, I, learned that this has been a problem since, early 80s. In the 70s, there were a lot of women in the engineering computer science world. If you look at NASA and, all that world in the 70s, in the 60s, it was mostly women that did the engineering. So trying to figure out, I'm young, I'm in my 20s, and I'm like, oh, I can figure this out. This will be a research paper. No, this isn't a one-stop shop. So that led me to, graduating and this being on my mind the whole time and going to my first job and realizing, no, this isn't just a university problem. This is a career problem. And that led to me starting a small meetup group of people that want to do good. Let's get different minded people to learn what computer science is, what is coding, what is producing with computers. I was on a lot of panels of, diversity, bringing women in tech, diversity in tech, to a point where I kind of got sick of being on these panels, being the token brown man in the room. And there was no problem with the panels. They saw the issue and they were talking about it. where I, and in hindsight, I shouldn't have been, but in hindsight, I realized that there were a lot of talking, but not many people were doing something about it.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I just, you know, just walked off stage one panel right at the end, you know, when they were doing the Q&A, and I'm like, I gotta go, because it was just, it hit me right in the spot. It's like, I'm so sick of answering the same questions and, you know, believing and trying to push the same vision through. And it was just a conversation. And probably there were people doing something about it, but I wasn't seeing it. And the panels just got redundant to me. So going back to work, I was gung-ho to do something, created that meetup group. Fast forward, I was in Chicago, flying back to Minneapolis. This is where I was working and doing the meetup group there and starting one here. And when I expressed to a bunch of people that my vision is to teach kids at a very young age computers and how to code and how to produce and how to actually code, not, you know, not a dumbed down kid version, but a real coding skill set. I posted this on Meetup and I had 70 people show up, which is insane. So I don't know. I struck a chord with a bunch of people. And, you know, we talked about what the vision was. I was very strong in my belief of this isn't, I don't want this to be a one-stop, come in and do something once and go away. I didn't want this to be a tinker program where you come in and you play around with, you know, computers or electronics. I wanted them to have a project in mind or produce something or have curriculum, which, you know, as that grew, after two or three meetings, people are like, this should be a nonprofit. And I'm like, classically, oh yeah, that shouldn't be hard, right? I'll just go online and look for it. And then a year later, we brought a nonprofit. At the time, becoming a nonprofit wasn't as easy as it is now. It's still not easy. So for anyone that's gone through the process, I'm not saying it's easy. But there was no, and you know, pun totally intended, there was no easy form. There is an easy form now. It was 44 pages, and the IRS would return, you know, send it back to you saying there's an error here, rather than check the whole thing and say there's an error here, here, and here. So, you would hate that. And it felt like old school programming to me when, you know, the program would fail and not tell you where all the problems were. It just failed here. So we got a lawyer, a good friend of mine. It's like, oh yeah, I can help you with that. You know, did it in one shot and got it all done. I'm like, why didn't I do this in the beginning? I didn't know. Yeah. So we became a nonprofit. And from there, it's just been exponential growth. And here we are. I'm doing a podcast.
Excellent. So one thing I was wondering is what do you think, or what do you believe caused that diversity shift from the 70s to about the 80s? Like what happened to that dynamic from there being tons of women in that field to there being almost none? How did that really come about? Do you have any idea of why that happened?
That's a really good question. That's like the question, you know, that is boggling all of our minds. What happened? Was it, you know, was it Joseph coming in and saying no more women, right? It wasn't as easy as that. I wish it was, because we'd be like, Joseph, get out of here, right? Like let's bring a reverse Joseph in there. No, it was, you know, I really don't know. I think there was a lot of factors in there. How education has changed over the years, how we tried to, and you know, this is from my own research, so there is no, I don't have any research to back this part up, but I believe that we're getting into a culture where we want people to be happy. Our generation, you know, is brought up to follow your dreams, do the things you love, right? And what that also entails with is people saying, hey, this, you know, you're struggling with this, so maybe it's not what you love. Maybe you go find the thing you love. Well, sometimes you got to just do the thing that's in front of you for a little bit.
Yeah.
Math, you know, particularly, right? Like when you're doing math, it is hard, but you should know math. You should know how to do this. So, you know, I don't blame any parents in this because, you know, they want the best for their kids. But, you know, what I hear currently, and this is data I do have, I see parents come in with their sons and daughters, but then they push their son forward rather than their daughter, right? Like they'll bring the daughter along to watch rather than do the class. And again, this is not everyone, but we see it more often than not, where, you know, all of our volunteers are trained to say, oh, let's have her, you know, participate. We set up extra computers. The parents don't know this until they've been through our courses before. They don't know that we have extra computers. We set it up because of that. We know our class size. We do 50% more every class. We max out our classes at 20 to 25, and then we set up 30, 35 computers.
Wow.
Mainly because we know we'll have a daughter or a son or someone that's not, you know, might not be interested, or someone that might not feel like this is for them. And we want them to just dabble in the first class. They don't have to take the whole course, but we make it so much fun that they do. They enjoy it. This 2 weeks ago, we had a mom bring her older daughter. Her younger daughter has been with us for 3 years now, and I didn't know she'd had another daughter. And this daughter was a teenager and was very much like, you know, I'm too cool for school, right? Like, I don't want to be here. Mom's boring. Mm-hmm. And we tried to convince her to take the class, but she just didn't really want to, right? And what happened was the mom sat and did the class. So we have one daughter taking a class who's been with us before, off to her own side with our mentors and going through the course with everyone. We had the mom doing the course with us, not near the younger daughter. And then we had the older daughter sitting next to the mom, just like, just being there. And after like 10 minutes, you know, taking over like the robot, then 20 minutes, taking over the keyboard, then, you know, 30 minutes, mom's grabbing a cup of coffee and kind of taking her time. And 45 minutes later, mom's found another computer, right? And we've, you know, shown her like, you can go sit over here. And she knew, because she's been through our courses before, that we make it fun. You're learning real things. So the robotics class, they're learning Python, the programming language. And they're learning how to control these robots, tell it what to do, these challenges. But we don't start and say, figure it out. We start with, what is Python? What does an empty file do? How do we, you know, connect to this robot? And what are the lines of code? You know, each line by line, we do it together. They're never taking a template and just changing numbers. They're doing it together. They're learning each line. They learn that typos matter. They learn that uppercase and lowercase matters. So for us, and I'm getting back to your question here of what happened, I think is a lot of things. There's the point of we moved away a little bit from math and exploring math and making sure everyone does math. We're telling people this might not be for you. And I understand if that's not what you're interested in, but the core things we need to have, right? Everyone should know how to read and write. There's no one here saying, no, maybe it's not for you. Reading is not for you. Yeah. Right? That we all laugh at that, right? But, you know, you hear maybe science isn't for you, right? And, you know, did any of you guys hear that growing up, or any of you guys have problems with science? You're like,
Well, I was a science nerd, so I didn't. Okay. I did hear art, though. I heard art wasn't for me. And then when I got older, I actually started studying art. And I'm not by any stretch an artist, but I learned how to draw a decent picture of like Pikachu or something. And I was like, I never would have thought.
And that statement really bothers me. I'm not an artist. What defines a thing, right? What defines an artist, a computer science programmer? What does it, you know, a scientist? Is it just getting that job? Sure. You know, someone would probably love to buy your Pikachu pictures, right? And then once you make that sale, you're a professional, right? That's the difference between an amateur and a professional. So, you know, I do this as well. I mean, like, we compare ourselves to the people that are killing it.
Yeah. Right?
You're like, oh, I'm not that skilled. It's like, if you think of an artist, if you compare them to like Picasso, you're like, okay, they're all right compared to Picasso, right?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, we can't compare ourselves like this. You know, do what you love and dabble with things. You know, I would also agree I am not an artist, but I would say I'm a designer. I can produce designs. I understand accessibility. I understand design. I understand how user flows work. I'm a designer. But if you give me a pen and tell me to draw your faces, nope, no idea. Right? It'd be stick figures, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot of things, what changed in the 70s or, you know, 60s or 80s. I think it's the change in education, which we're all, you know, adapting to and evolving. It's the change of personalities. Families that can afford it are sending their kids into more experimental stuff. So the ones that are getting the education into computer science are the ones that could have afforded it. It wasn't part of math. And then the divide between math and computer science. We stopped doing the computers with the mathematics. And what's interesting is, you know, in the early days, computers, most people that used computers in the early days were women because it was a carryover from the typing pools, right? So the typewriters making, these giant rooms of women making copies or writing letters or whatever. And I mean, that to a computer is just a small jump. Now you have a display rather than a piece of paper coming out. Yeah. And then they're learning how to code it. Then they're learning how to interact with it. So what happened? And that's what we're all trying to figure out. There's a ton of research out there saying one thing. There's another one saying this thing. There's another thing, like maybe it's sexism or is it classism, right? Is it racism? Is it an ism? And it's probably all of it, right? There's probably all of it in the space. But I don't, it's weird if I do run into this, but I don't run into anyone that is hiring or in a level of management saying, I do not want to have X in here, right? I don't want a certain type of person.
Yeah.
Especially in tech, they're like, I need people. Please send me people.
Have to do the job.
Yeah. It's like, I don't care. Like, as long as they can do the job, you know, here's a bunch of money. Right? because we don't, this is the only industry, only profession that has grown through all the recessions, all the downturns, has not dipped at all. And it's still underemployed. We need more people because it's growing. And the people that are in the industry are creating new industries, right? So now we have machine learning and AI and, you know, drones. And it's just, you know, it's in its infancy and it's creating more babies right now. So this is why everyone needs to code. And for us, my mentality is not everyone needs to be an engineer. Not everyone needs to, you know, go into this career, but it's in the same realm of reading. Everyone should know how it works and know how to read code. Same thing, right? I'm not an author, right? I can't write a book, but I know how to read a book. I know how to interact with the book, right? I can write emails, right? So yeah, that's our mindset. I hope that answered it with a bunch of
Definitely. Go ahead.
So for coding, is that like just a general term then for like all the different kinds of like things people do with computers? Or can you explain, you know, like a little bit more in depth what exactly coding is?
Yeah. So for us, we use the word coding as the blanket, right? So there's, you know, more defined term of programming, right? Telling a computer what to do. But coding is a little bit more accessible, right? It's not the longer word, it's a smaller word. It's a little bit more hip. It's easier to use. So in coding, what can you, like what I hear in that is like, what can you do with coding, right? What is coding? So anytime you're telling something what to do, that's not another human being, we look at it as coding. So we can code a computer, right? We all know that. But we can also code a robot. We can also code our phones, right? Our phones are computers. We can also code things that are not full-fledged computers. So think of these little devices, and I'll show it to you during our break here. They're little devices that are I would say just very simple machines. They can do something. So you've probably heard of the Raspberry Pi. No? Yes? No? You haven't? Okay, good. So the Raspberry Pi is a very, very cheap computer. They're $5. It's a full computer. Yeah, that's the face I usually get. They're $5, but what they don't give you is they don't have a keyboard, they don't have a mouse, they don't have a monitor. You can get those, right? People have monitors laying around. Are they fast enough to run your latest game? No. Can they run a web browser? Yes. Can you program onto them? Yes. But for $5, think of all the projects you can do. So the Raspberry Pi Foundation are trying to bring computing to everyone at a lower cost. So their cheapest one is $5. It's like yay big, right? It's super tiny. And you get up to like $35, $40. Again, still under $50 for a computer. That's so cheap. What can you do with it? Well, you can build a computer and just have a computer laying around. You can build a kitchen computer, right? Have in your kitchen that displays recipes. You can build listening devices, kind of like the Google Home or Alexa or all these other listening devices, right? Attach a little microphone to it, write a little program. Alexa already gives you the program, so you can just download it and build with it, right? They have voice recognition already done for you. You don't have to do that stuff. Now you have a little, you know, assistant with you. And you can say only when they say, you know, computer, now it listens, right? Or, you know, now let's say that little microphone, you put it on a little Lego car, add some motors to it. Now your Alexa can follow you, right?
That's crazy.
That is.
Right? It's insane. So coding is all this. It's the breadth of what it is to tell a computer what to do, tell a machine what to do, right? I hope that answered it.
Oh yeah, yes, definitely. and that's really cool too, because I think when you hear this word coding, sometimes it creates this illusion of something that's like too big for you to understand, but you made it very, very bite-sized and understandable for the average person to comprehend.
Yeah.
So when it comes to coding and what you're doing in the not-for-profit world, how do you find a lot of the partnerships that allow you to run this organization? Like, how do you find the people who can help you fill this room with, you know, children and different people who've never thought about coding before, and facilitate them learning the actual skill of coding?
Yeah, so that's a wonderful question. It's when we talk nonprofit, we talk about it as this is a business through and through, right? So this typical stuff that a business needs, we need as well. The only thing that's different is our mission is public facing. And at the end of the year, our books are public facing, right? So we can't hide anything. You can look up what my salary is. You can look up, you know, how much we spent on this and that, right? Now it's not a deep dive of it, right? You can't see, bought how much meals did we buy for kids, but you can see, you know, what are we spending the public money on? Yeah. Now for us, you know, we don't go after the government funding out there because it is very competitive. And it is, you know, they're trying to figure out where they want to spend the money. Now, there's different levels of government funding. There's, you know, federal, state, local, even hyper-local ones. For us, most of our funding comes from companies. We go to these companies and say, this is your future workforce. Do you want them to work for you or your competitor, right? That's one. Two, your current workforce wants to give back. Because realistically, what they're doing, they can go do at other company, right? Y company, Z company, but you want them to stay at your company. So how do you give back? Now, most of them have volunteer hours. Most of them have give back days. A lot of them pay their employees to go volunteer, which is insane. Go volunteer and we'll pay you, right?
Ridiculous.
Right? And then you have... Right. It's insane, right? And then you have, outside of that, we have companies that are paying their employees to go volunteer, like extra on top of their salary, right? So they're salaried and getting, you know, beer money, technically, right? Little money on the side per hour they're volunteering. But then they're also saying, we believe in this nonprofit. If our volunteers chose this nonprofit, we will also give part of that to them as well. So let's say they're getting $10 an hour to go volunteer, and then they're going to give the nonprofit, let's say, $10 an hour per volunteer. So if you get 10 volunteers doing 5 hours of work, right, that's not, you know, chump change to come in and work with you. So those are very few, and not every company is doing that. A lot of companies are at the level of, we will let them take a day off work, or we will promote them within the company saying, look, you know, Joseph or Jasmine are volunteering, you should also go volunteer, right? Which makes the employee feel, you know, welcome and feels included. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the larger companies are getting into, you know, promoting it even more, dedicating hours for the year, and also then getting to the payments. There are, you know, I don't know the number, but the companies we've worked with, only three of them are paying their, you know, giving money, stipends to their volunteers, where majority aren't. But it's moving that way because they want, the retention is number one for them, right? At the end of the day, what money do, you know, what money they spend is key, right? What are they losing? So training new employees is expensive. Hiring is expensive, right? You guys know this, right? So they want to keep their employees happy. Happy employees do good work. And how do we keep them happy? By have them do work that they enjoy outside of work and see their company promote that within. So when we go to a company, it's like, yes, this is your future workforce, but you're thinking 5 years, you know, ahead. Not everyone's thinking 5 years ahead. Let's think about now. You have this workforce that wants to give back, but they don't know where to give back. So what do? They go find the volunteer opportunities out there that are the typical volunteer. Soup kitchens, right? Ronald McDonald House, volunteering at a run, cancer aware, you know, awareness stuff. Mm. But their skill set is outside of that. You know, yes, we all can volunteer at a soup kitchen, and we should. Everyone should at least once a year, right? Yeah. But can a person that can program or code or is in the tech field or just in an office workspace, can they help a child grow into a new career? Yes, they know how to do that. And over the years, we have over 200 volunteers right now in our system. And we can talk about active and, you know, in system a little bit later. But we tell them there is no commitment level. Come in and do whenever you can. And as we grow, we get a lot of people over the years we've been hearing, but I don't code, right? Which is like, I want to volunteer. It's code from the code for, I want to volunteer, but I'm scared because I don't want to feel like a fish out of water. I also don't want to give them wrong information, the kids, right? So, you know, for us, it's like, we train you. And there's an instructor already doing this stuff ahead of you, right? So as long as you can read, you know, see where reading comes back. As long as you can read and follow along, you'll be fine. So for us, we do a 2-to-1 ratio for every two kids, there's a volunteer. So think of a classroom, we have 30, right? In a normal school system, it's 30-to-1, right? Yeah. But in our system is what? 30-to-15. That's insane. So that's why we keep the class small, because we don't want a classroom of 100 bodies in the room, because that just makes it a mess, right? And we've done large events, but for our ongoing classes, we keep the class small. That's why we set up extra computers, because parents show up as well. This allows them to experiment, try new things, and not be scared to try something and feel like it's going to fail. Because what the worst thing they could do in our classes is step on a computer, right? Why would they do that, right? The, you know, they could And I would be proud of them. I'll say this publicly. If they write a virus and destroy the computer, we can replace the computer. But you got the knowledge to write a virus?
That's badass.
That's badass, right? Like, let's use that for good now, right? Let's not do something evil. Not all viruses are bad, right? Let's do something good, right? We've had stories of kids taking our classes and going back to school. And, program their TI calculators with little games or little equations. Wow. And it makes me feel so good because that's what I did when I was in high school. That's when I got suspended for that because they thought I was cheating. And it was hilarious because my dad went to the superintendent and said, if my child is smart enough to program this thing, do you think he needs to cheat? Right. And it was a valid point. It's like, if I know how to do the quadratic equation in code, I can do it on paper. Right. And what my dad doesn't know is the thing I got in trouble for was sharing it. Right. There is the problem. There is the rub. Right. So if I can do the programming, but if someone else is using the program, that's their, that's a fault. But I was young. What's that?
I said, that's on them, though.
I know, right? I can give them the tools, but if they use it wrong, right, that's not my fault.
That's really cool. Yeah. So when it comes to, like, coding, is this basically kind of like a language that you learn that you basically just speak to the computer, the robot, yeah, whatever it is, using the language, and then it responds back to you with that language or with the actions?
You got it perfectly, right? So it's you telling a machine, a computer usually, what to do, but you have to speak its language, right? Our language right now is English. You and I, speaking through a bunch of machines, right, are able to communicate with our language.
Yeah.
So when you talk to a computer, you have to speak its language. Now, what's awesome, just like the human language, there's tons of different languages. We could speak Mandarin, we could speak Spanish, right? We can switch between this. Now, I don't know Spanish or Mandarin, but if we both knew this, we could talk. With a computer, it's the same way. So if you feel like I understand, let me give you one language, Python. I understand it better. I've spoken that language. You can tell a computer what to do with Python. But let's say you've dabbled in C or C++ or C#, right? All these other languages. Like, I kind of like the way that communicates, right? That it's a more, I'm making this up. It's more of a poetic language, right? Like, I like to speak French rather than English because it's like, I like it more. It's fluid, right? Great. If we were in a world where we could all speak a bunch of languages, you would pick your favorite and go with that, whichever is more expressive in the moment, right? So we do that with coding. We expose them, but we also push them along into intermediate and advanced classes of learning to code with that machine. So we teach Python currently. We teach Python with robots. So when they tell a robot move forward or give left wheel and right wheel 100% power, it'll do that. But then it runs off the table, right? And then they're like, oh, stop after 2 seconds. Okay. That was the robot, the machine speaking back to me saying, I'm going to keep going, yo. Like, I don't know. Like, you told me to do this. I'm going to do it. And then you're like, oh, it's nonverbal communication back to me. There are languages that will visually say this is wrong or this is, I don't understand. But a lot of times we have to give the machine a way to communicate. So we via a display or via a light. So we can build these sensors that every time, maybe when you yell too loud, a red light goes up. Or, if you have a sensor that is a bend sensor, right? So if you bend it, you can give that information to your code and say, if I don't bend it, it's green. But as I bend it, the more I bend it, a full bend is red. So give me the numbers or colors between green and red, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have a yellow in there. You have a cyan maybe in there, right? You tell it what you want to see. But sometimes you're like, I don't care that it turns colors. I want it to, this is a fun one that a student I wanted to do. Every time that it was quiet in the room, they wanted the machine to scream. So it was like a reverse quiet meter. So it would quiet down. It wouldn't do anything when it was loud enough, right? But when it got quiet, it wanted this like screaming, and you know, and she recorded it. She recorded the voice of it. So it was her scream into it. Those are the things that are fun. Not everything's useful. Nothing in, you know, half the world isn't useful. How do we make something that we enjoy? And then use that as a learning lesson, but also use that and be like, okay, you have this knowledge. How do I use that to make something useful?
Yeah.
Right? Which is literally she created an alarm, right? But a reverse alarm. What we joke as the everything is okay alarm. As long as the alarm is going off, everything's okay. But once the alarm stops, you're like, uh-oh, what's going on? Which is the reverse what an alarm should be. Yeah. So you understood it perfectly. Yeah, we're telling a computer what to do.
Cool. Yeah. So you mentioned that you have volunteers come in from these companies, and these companies not only pay the volunteers, but they also pay the company where the volunteer is. Is that where you get like 100% of your funding, or
no?
Tell me a little bit about the fundraising.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. I think I confused you a little bit. So some companies do, most companies don't do that model. Where we go in is we go into the company and we talk about how we add value. So when we are training their employees and all the stuff that I talked about, where we come in is like, now we are asking for this much for a partnership or a sponsorship package. What does that look like? A lot of times it's marketing, external marketing, internal marketing, press releases. But based on the level, they also get their name on, you know, material, right? Uh-huh. So, you know, most companies that we go into want to give back, but they want to make sure their give back goes somewhere useful, right? Yeah. We show them results. We have the full loop back of here's the students that you taught, right? Here's some video. Here's, you know, your volunteers were at this class. So you can just go ask them, you can go talk to them. And, you know, so that's a small, you know, a decent chunk of our funding is coming from that. The other chunks are grants. So we apply for grants, STEM grants or engineering grants or just enrichment, job readiness grants. There's so many different types of grants. We are a very small company. It's myself and myself. We are hiring right now. Literally, I'm going after this podcast to a couple of interviews. We're looking for people. We're growing fast. We've been around for 7 years. 5 years I've been doing this full time. And we have a wonderful part-time staff. We have associate board members. We have a full associate board. We have a full board. And like I said, we have this giant volunteer pool. And not all of them are working at the companies that we're, you know, getting partnerships with. They come find us. We just did an expo with the city of Chicago, the volunteer expo. We had 114 people sign up to be volunteers. That's insane, right? Now, what percentage of them will come and volunteer, you know, at the end? Who knows? I'm hoping 114, right? But realistically, we're aiming for 50%.
Yeah.
So from there, you know, they go back to their companies and say, this is awesome. You should be supporting this. So that's a chunk as well. And then outside of that, we do summer camps for the kids. So I don't know if I said this. All of our weekend classes are free, 100% free. Okay. We want to make sure they're free so that we're serving the neighborhoods that we want to serve. They're open to everyone. We're focused on bringing girls into the program and underserved neighborhoods in Chicago. But we are open to everyone because we know that how we teach and what we teach isn't offered in most schools, if not all of the schools. None of them are covering it. There are some schools that are doing it and we love them. We give them materials. They give us some feedback in their material sometimes, but majority of schools are not. And it's not the school's fault at all. We know this. It's funding, right? It's a lack of training for their employees, right? Which goes back to funding, right? And lack of time. And it's a moving needle. What is this new field, and new I put in quotes because it's been around forever, but, you know, not as long as math and science, right? Spectrum here is totally different. But what is it, what should we be teaching them to be career ready, but also job ready, also university ready? So that's changing. And the Illinois has put in some college prep and graduation requirements, which I was part of. And the state is doing good work. They could do better. I'm always in the mindset of they could do better in terms of just funding alone and credits for the teachers to get accredited even more. Yeah. But so that's a silo, the summer camps, right? And then this is a side thing I do. We run a speaking event called Ignite Talks Chicago. It's a lightning style talk event. It's every month. Well, sorry, it's 11 months out of the year. It's the last Tuesday of every month. It's a sold out crowd. So we get 100, 115 people that come to this event every month. It's a ticketed event. So they're you know, buying a ticket to get a seat. But what some of them do know, because we have a good community, but what a lot of them don't know when they come to the event is all that money, all the ticket sales goes to the nonprofit, goes straight into classes, not even salaries. That doesn't go into anything admin, and goes straight into the cost of a class. Wow. So they will, and I have a slide right in the beginning. I say, you just funded a class. And they just look at each other like, when did I do this? Right? Well, I didn't donate yet. I want to donate, but when did I do this? And it's like, no. It takes time and money to run this event, but I believe in the mission of the nonprofit. So we put in time. We put in the going out and getting funders. So our sponsors are just wonderful people that we get our space sponsored by Catalyst Ranch. We get our beer and pizza sponsored by different organizations. We get coffee sponsored. We have other organizations coming in to say, we want to sponsor, but you already have your in-kind sponsor. How else can we sponsor you? So it is 100% fundraiser event disguised as a speaking event. Yeah. And the fun with the speaking event is it's 10 speakers. Each speaker, this is pre-selected and they've been practicing with us. They have 5 minutes to speak about their passion. And the slides, they have 20 slides, and their slides auto advance on them every 15 seconds. So it's insane. Like, just imagine it, like you're doing this thing and out of nowhere it switches. yeah. So it's super fun. It's super fun. Yeah. So that's another funding stream. So I know I went to deep dive into all these, but yeah, that's how we fund ourselves.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was going to say, are we well funded? No, we need more funding. So if people are interested, your audience, they want to give to us, it does make a huge difference. Even the $20, $30, just go to our site, weallcode.org. There's a donate button and just donate. It's the model of if everyone donates a little bit, it covers the classes. Mostly, a lot of our cost is the class itself. We, outside of teaching the class and getting the space and the equipment, we bring all the equipment. No kids are bringing in anything. So we provide the computers, the mice, the everything. Outside of even that, we provide them food. So when they come in, they're getting lunch on us. Because we know some of these students, this will be their only meal of the day. Wow. And I don't want them to think about food when they're learning how to code, right?
Yeah,
coding definitely should be fun. You know, you should have your Maslow's hierarchy of needs met already. Yeah. So let's make sure that you're fed. And then you can focus on learning something new, make it enjoyable. So that's day one I started doing that. In the beginning, it was just, you know, my salary going to this, right? And then when I quit, I'm like, all right, I'm not making a salary. So how do I, you know, cover this? So it's the micro donations that the parents are doing, the people that come into our site, the monthly donations that help a ton.
That's awesome. So everybody listening, go donate like something.
For sure.
Just something little. Yeah. So we do want to respect your time and start wrapping it up. So What is the number one takeaway that you want someone to walk away from this episode with?
So my takeaway is everyone should be giving back. If your life is in a decently stable place, go out and see what you enjoy doing and give back in that field. So if you're a technologist and you want to train some kids, come volunteer with us. If you really like to run, go do some 5Ks for a charity. Not every charity that is doing a 5K is related to a health thing. So if you like running and you believe in technology, go do a 5K, a 10K or a marathon and raise money and give it to a nonprofit like us, right? Like, make sure that you're giving back at least once a quarter. I implore people to do it at least, you know, once a month. Doesn't have to be something crazy. You don't have to commit your life to it. Go to a pound, go walk some dogs, right? Give back and you will feel refreshed to go do what you have to do. Answer those 400 emails that are waiting in your inbox. Go to that boss, maybe ask for that raise. When you feel confident, it's going to be amazing for you to do your things you want to do. So go give back and build that confidence.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So whether it be either in your personal life or in your non-for-profit, your company, whatever it is that you do, what is your favorite way of spreading abundance?
Oh, I like to spread abundance and joy. My favorite way is to get people to love what they do and learn something new and then go spread that joy. Absolutely. Right? It's the, and you guys are doing this with the podcast, right? So it's like, do what you do, but do it in the public space and, you know, implore people to do, you know, spread that love.
Yeah.
You know, be it if it's, you know, coding or not. Yeah. Find it. And that's what makes my, you know, tough weeks, those hard weeks, you know, enjoyable, is when I go to those classes and see these kids, you know, like, look what I made. It's a meme generator, right?
Yeah.
Look what I did, you know, and go back. And next time they come back, they have a friend with them, or they make a friend at the class, or they tell their parents, and that joy. That's what's amazing to me. Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I love it. So for the person that they think you're awesome and they just want to talk to you about like coding or anything really, or if they want to donate, you already gave us the link, but you can give it again. How does that person get into contact with you?
Yeah. So if they think I'm awesome, I think they're awesome. So even if they don't think I'm awesome, I think they're awesome. If they want to get involved with We All Code, it's wealcode.org. So wealcode.org. You can sign up to volunteer there. You can sign up your kids to take a class. All of our classes are in person. So if you're, you know, not in Chicago, I'm sorry, there's probably some STEM stuff out there for you. But yeah, come find us on our website. If you are interested in Ignite, it's Ignite, C-H-I, so I-G-N-I-T-E-C-H-I.org for Ignite. And that, you know, we're 11 months out of a year. And you can find us on all the social medias, whatever, right? MySpace even. I used to joke about that. Then I'm like, well, I can go create an account. So we do have an account on MySpace. Follow us on MySpace.
Crazy.
We don't check it. But yeah. But yeah, you know, whatever skill set you have, come to us. You know, our social media wouldn't be possible if it wasn't a 17-year-old student coming to us and say, I want to be an intern. We're like, okay, let's figure it out. Now she's a staff member.
Wow.
And she runs our social media. So it's like, anything's possible if you have that passion. So that's how you can find us.
For sure.
Follow your passion. Yeah.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Ali, for coming on to the Abundant Culture Podcast and sharing your wealth of knowledge, not only about coding, but also not-for-profits to our audience, because we feel like it's something that's super important. You know, the job market as we know it is changing at an extremely fast rate nowadays. Yeah. And we want to give people the option of, if you are in the market to make a career shift, or even if you're a young kid trying to figure out what you want to do, coding is a is an option, and it's an awesome option. It sounds very, very fun. We're going to have to come to a class one day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we just appreciate you for giving that option to our audience. And we think that what you're doing is amazing, and that we pray that you prosper in your mission.
That means so much. I love what you guys do. This, I could talk to you two for days, and it's just so enjoyable. But thank you for having me, and thank you for the kind words.
No problem.
No problem. Yeah.
So that's all we have for today, folks. I hope you got as much value out of this as we did. Keep in mind, the only way we can improve is through constructive feedback. So remember to rate and review this episode. Also, you are not the only person that needs to know this super valuable information. So be sure to subscribe and share as well. Stay tuned for the next episode. And remember to always spread abundance. Peace.